a really quick and exciting announcement to make. The Menopause and Cancer Podcast is now also on YouTube, and I'm so excited that more people now get to watch our conversations. So the link to the YouTube channel is in our show notes. Please go and subscribe to the channel so that more people who need to hear our conversations are able to find them. Thank you. Welcome to the Menopause and Cancer Podcast, where we speak with cancer patients, survivors, and incredible experts in their fields to help you find solutions to your symptoms and ideas to improve your health. My name is Dani Binnington, and welcome to episode 99 on the podcast. I am so delighted that we're here, and ahead of celebrating 100 episodes next week, I've got a very special guest on the show today. My husband, Tim Binnington, is here to join us today, and I want to reflect with him over the last 10 years of surviving cancer and managing cancer survivorship and what that meant for him and myself. And I also wanted to talk and focus on some of the real positives that came out of a really difficult situation for us and the family. We want to talk about all the great things Tim has gone on to do and how partly that has enabled me to do what I do and talk to you here every single week. Of course, we will talk about our debut at Dragon's Den a few weeks back, and we're going to go and tell you all the ins and outs of that day. So I'm really excited for Tim to join us, and I hope that this conversation is also going to be helpful for you to reflect upon your relationships with your family and your loved ones, because as we will explain, it's never plain sailing. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Dani.
We have tried to record this for the last hour and a half, and we have had technology issues, but we're not yet divorced, and here we are. Welcome back to the podcast, Tim.
Was not yet.
Anyway, oh my gosh, how funny. It's episode 99, Tim, and I really wanted you to come back onto the podcast, so thank you for being here.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you. I feel honoured.
So we have had a conversation about post-survivorship and relationships before, and I can link to that in the show notes. But today's a really special episode because I don't think I would be here. I could have done what I've done without your continued help and support. And I wanted to thank you very much for that.
Oh, that's really sweet. Thank you, Shetsy.
Let's go back all of those years when I finished active cancer treatment and we were really on different pages of survivorship. And yeah. I was so worried about my cancer coming back, and you were really good at living, or you had learned to live in the moment, and you were starting to get excited about the future. But it was like we were sort of derailing, walking on separate sort of pathways, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, it was. I've got a pretty selective memory. I sort of filter out bad stuff as much as I can and just keep the good stuff. So I don't remember bad stuff as much. I know it was harrowing, but I don't try and harbour on it. But I did have that therapy, which helped. So that lady in the therapy, who was from the Butterfly Centre in Epsom, she made me stick in the moment rather than be in the future of what could happen rather than what is happening. And she explained that when you have finished a treatment, you didn't have any cancer then. We have three lovely children. We have a lovely network of people. We were lucky enough to be financially secure. So we had everything that we needed to be in that particular moment really good.
And I think that is a gift. If someone can truly live it, and I think you are the example that it is possible to truly live it, and yet that anchor into the present moment hadn't really rubbed off on me, because I really struggled for a very long time. And I openly talk about that because I think it's important for people to know that those are realistic expectations to have as well, and realistic post-cancer survivorship journeys. And I wonder where everyone is at home. But today we also wanted to focus on a lot of positives, because we have both survived this, my active cancer treatment, for many, many years now. And I wanted to talk about some of those positives. And one positive for me was that you really threw yourself into your exercise. Tell me what that meant for you and how that was important for you.
Well, it's a good point, actually, because it was so suffocating, your illness. So in terms of, we knew the diagnosis wasn't good. So there was a point where I was preparing for you not to be around, which was really challenging. And I was very scared. And then even when you had the treatment, and you were an outlier, basically, weren't you? So you were doing extremely well in terms of your survival. With everything that was going on, and you thought it was coming back, and it was just good to have something else to focus on. And some people would stick to, I don't know, during the process, if you're anxious, you might start drinking more or taking drugs or having another vice, gambling or something. And mine was exercise. And it really did help, because there's so many programs out there, you know, Ironmen and triathlons and swimming and running and every sort of exercise you want. And so it gave me a goal and something to focus on, which I'm really grateful for. And I remember, I don't take any headsets with me when I run. I just have my mind, and my mind is sort of like a blue sky, and a cloud is like a thought that drifts across it. And that sort of helped me loads. It did help me loads. And I still do it now, religiously, really.
Thanks so much for listening so far. It means a lot. I make this podcast to support other women who faced a similar struggle to me. So if you know someone who you think might benefit from listening, please share the link with them. I would really appreciate it. And when you think back over all those years that you got up early in the morning when it's still dark outside, when it rains, and you've been, you know, putting your running trainers on and you've been out there, that's a lot of hours sort of processing and anchoring and digesting of what's happened, I suppose.
Yeah, but what I didn't tend to do was dwell on it too much. I ran and didn't think. So thoughts will come in and thoughts will go out. But it was a form of meditation without even realizing, because I think in meditation, you don't generally focus on something. You tend to not focus.
So your running became my yoga in a way. And you'll remember when your mum started to pick me up on a Tuesday and she took me to the church hall down the road at one of our local villages. And I started to do yoga with her and her sort of local group then. And although that was only once a week initially, it became quite an important Tuesday evening for me. Remember, because the kids were little, it was a thing to get out of the house. It needed planning. And it became a really sort of important anchor in my week.
Well, it did. But you, when you were going through cancer, remember you did that after you did that half the half marathon you did. And you were always walking and exercising anyway. And you focused on your diet a lot. So you were in a mindset to get yourself in a different position. You did stop drinking. Everything you did was about surviving. And that next stage, I think, for your mind and body was yoga. And mum was brilliant because she got you into that. But boy, did you get into it. You really engaged in it. And that was a real savior for you, wasn't it?
It was. Can you remember every holiday? And I looked back at now our family pictures. There are pictures of me and the girls doing handstands. When we went down to Rye that weekend, we were on a stone wall and we're all doing warrior twos. Can you remember? There's like so many family photos.
Yeah, I remember because I was always taking the blooming pictures. So I was wherever. Oh, picture. Here we go. Downward dog. Here we go. Another one.
It became more than just the yoga practice.
The eagle. Yeah,
it's true though, right? It became more than just a weekly yoga practice. It became part of the family. The kids did it with me everywhere we went. It gave joy. We created lovely photos. It was a joyful, and I think because we always took photos and I started to put them on Instagram, and we're talking many years back now. And when I started to look back over my own feed, it just started to look healthy. And I think so desperately needed to create a positive, healthy future for myself. And I almost needed to see it. And that's where pictures were actually very helpful for me, because it's like creating your own magazine. And mine started to become healthy food and yoga. And so health sort of sparkled its way through into my week.
Yeah, and it's that is interesting because I can't remember the catalyst in terms of what built up, what came first. I mean, I know the yoga was there, but you already were determined to get yourself healthy and change your lifestyle. And then the food was a major part. And you still had all your anxiety, but that was a good anchor, wasn't it, the yoga?
Because people always say to me, gosh, I'm sure you always ate really healthily. And when I sort of want to be really honest and say, oh, my gosh, no, I didn't even know how to cook, right?
No, God. I mean, anything, if you were looking, if it's salt or flour, it didn't matter. You just put it in.
And you were actually cooking loads for us. And if I had had beans on toast for like 4 days in a row, that would have been all right for me, remember?
Oh, God, you were, you weren't very good cook. But what was great about you, you weren't scared to do something. So you cooked like, if it tasted right, whatever herb you had, you put in. I would follow a recipe religiously. If I didn't have the right lettuce leaf, I'd have to buy it or whatever. You would just throw anything in you could. But you know what? You are such a good cook. I love
your
food.
I am now.
Yeah, I know. But what it shows is, right, it doesn't matter. As long as you just go for it, it doesn't matter. It's just, and you've, oh my gosh, your food's lovely.
And just like I wanted to share the doctors and knowledge here on the Menopause and Cancer podcast for everyone affected when that sort of became a thing for me. Before then, I wanted to share my recipes. So I want you to think back of all the times where I had, you know, over the years, hundreds of local women in my kitchen and we all cooked my healthy recipes together. They were my superfood supper clubs. And I wanted to share that cooking can be joyous, that recipes can be healthy and easy. And I wanted to share with everyone that we can bring the joy back into cooking, because what I felt cooking for myself and you and the kids was a bit joyless sometimes, because the kids, you know, were a bit picky at times. And I remember you going off to the fish and chip shop once after I cooked you courgette spaghetti and someone saw you. Can you remember that even?
No, I can't actually. That's my selective memory again. I can't remember that.
But that joy of sharing the recipes that worked for us as a family, that became a thing. And you remember we're tidying the kitchen and we had all these different people at the house cooking with me.
Oh, my God.
It was joyful.
You know what was weird for that is you are right. Everyone loved it. And what was apparent to me, someone like you who didn't cook, who learned to cook, and then you were sharing your knowledge and the lack of knowledge from everyone about how good a food could be or how to make a healthy meal, a really quick healthy meal and really have it tasty. You know, it was interesting because there was such a void with healthy food and people's lifestyles. And it's so easy to buy instant meals, you know, ready-made meals and stuff and snack food and everything. And actually it's terrible for us. So, but you brought that community feel and we had some, yeah, great. I mean, I'd come back sometimes and there'd be about 20 people in the kitchen. And they'd all be cooking up stuff. And then you'd all eat afterwards, wouldn't you? Do you remember? You'd all have people around
fantastic.
The table. But it was such a buzz. And people loved it, didn't they? Yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
And I did that for years. And it was actually the conversation over the dinner tables with women that I felt really special. Sometimes we didn't even talk about the food. Sometimes we talked about other stuff that was important to us. And in a way, I think this is why I'm so passionate about creating conversations and hosting this Menopause and Cancer conversation, because community and talking about stuff and mulling things over together in a safe space is really healing and really wonderful. And so in a way, I want to still share all of that passion through our Supper Social fundraiser, which we're, you know, launching now through Menopause and Cancer. And I just want people to have that experience and recreate it in their own homes. So they cook our recipes and they do it with their own friends in their homes, whether that's for breakfast, lunch or dinner, and to bring some of that joy to them and for everyone, you know, wherever they are in the world, to be able to access what we did all those years back here in our local village in Surrey. And I'm excited about that because it's almost like, you know, sharing and amplifying the love. Tim, something else happened around that time. So I was doing lots of yoga and cooking, you were running, but you kind of, after I had lost my hair and after it had grown back after chemotherapy, you kind of became obsessed with trying to invent and then later on also inventing a new hairbrush. And I can't really remember what happened, but I want to talk about it. Everyone knows we've been on Dragon's Den. People have asked so many questions. So what was it? I lost my hair. I kept saying, I just want to have bristles on my fingers. Every hairbrush felt too harsh on my head. I didn't want my hairbrushes to be matted with hair. What was it in you that thought, I can do something about this?
That is a good question. Again, you know that whole thing about, we talked about having some other distraction. I needed something to focus on because my other work, I wasn't working so much. I was lucky enough not to work so much. And what we thought was going to happen with you and I, pre-cancer, suddenly we were going along a path and it went in a totally different path. Again, we were talking the other day about this Chinese symbol of crisis is the same symbol for opportunity. And I'm not saying, but in this crisis, as you said, other opportunities arose, and yours with your yoga and your food and menopause and cancer and the journey. And when I saw you struggling with your hair, I've been in hairdressing for 30 odd years, and we service over 10,000 clients a week in our salons. And all I'd ever say to people is, the hairdressers, clean your brushes because you've got so much hair in your brushes. But I never actually said, is that right that we've got so much hair in the brushes? And when I researched it, which I had time, I realized the hairbrush had not changed its original design for 150 years. And the principle of holding a hairbrush and pulling it through the hair and hoping the bristles will bend enough to go through knots and not pull your hair out, which is just ridiculous because there's no way in physics that that many bristles will not pull your hair out. So it became an occupational sort of hazard that everyone looking at their hairbrush would have tons of hair. Now, when you had that, it exacerbated it because you had no hair. And when your hair was growing back, you were just desperate to keep on to what you had. So it was concentrated. And when you said to me about bristles on the fingers, I thought, why isn't there a hairbrush that moves with your hand and works like you can feel what you're doing? And I realized then there's nothing like it. And primarily it's because it was too challenging to make. Hairbrushes traditionally were made cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And so people's expectations of a hairbrush is what, £10, £15 at the most. And you think, oh, I'll get that in. You might spend £200 on your hair to be cut and colored, but you only want to spend a tiny amount on a hairbrush that you want to keep for about 3 or 4 or 5 years. And it was disproportionate. So it's one of those things. I knew there was an opportunity to change this. And then that's why I focused on it.
Mm. In the early days, and I'm talking, you know, that was years, you would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you would email people. We now know they were in China and you didn't even know where these people were. And you started to invest some money, but it wasn't like loads and loads and loads of money. And the family kind of thought, oh yeah, Tim's got a little hobby. And then as you became more, I wouldn't say obsessed, but like more sort of like, you were putting more hours in, weren't you? We all went, okay, what is he actually doing? And I think it was the time where you said to me, I've got it now. I'm going to file for a patent and it's going to cost me X amount of thousands of pounds. I thought, hang on a minute. How much money have you spent? You'd not told me in all this time how much money you had invested, much time and research and effort you had made with this. And suddenly you were talking about patterns in different markets of the world. And I thought, hang on a minute. And the whole family were kind of a little bit concerned, I would say, about you, because we thought, you know, this initial sort of passion, what's happened to him? Has he lost his marbles, basically? Do you just feel that you were always just really driven to do this or obsessed or convinced? What was it in you?
That's a good question. I think you don't know what's round the corner, right? This would never have happened without you being ill. So I would never have had the need or researched it enough. It wouldn't have been enough of a problem. You had really thick hair as well prior to cancer. So it was never really a major concern. it's when you see a problem and then you realize you can do something about it. It became a challenge. And also it's a distraction from you, you know, at first. And then I was convinced I got something. And it timed in with those 3D printers because we made them in 3D. And there was, I got the guy who makes these models for me. He was somewhere in the Far East or something. And I kept waking him up to try and get stuff done. And the whole process took about 4 or 5 years, didn't it?
Well, I do remember because we went to Petersham Nurseries for lunch to celebrate my 5 years, no evidence of disease. And it was around that time that you started to go out with the finished product and the Manta. And I think in all those 5 years, where I always thought we were on the right track, I did have my doubts, especially when you started to spend bigger amounts of money and you started to employ people and you had a whole team of people working with you on this without ever even selling a single hairbrush. But where I always thought, okay, this is really important, is when you started to do your research and you worked with universities and we had so many other people that we talked about and we suddenly realized, okay, this is a really huge problem. We have millions of people out there with a hair problem and it's not spoken about. And when we spoke to people and they said, I'm doing everything to cover up, like I was putting, and I still am putting, hair fiber on to cover up my bald patches. I was painting my head. Can you remember one day I painted, it's almost like I used watercolors or something to paint the bald patches into my head where my hair wasn't growing back and it was raining. And then I had it all on my fingers. Like, I did everything to try and conceal that my hair was so thin and so fine. And when we then started to realize there are millions of people with a hair issue, they think the hair is too thin or it's shedding more or it's breaking more, or they have color treated their hair for decades and then it's starting to be brittle or it's lost its mojo. I thought, okay, there are silenced voices out there and we need to see how we can help. And so I became very passionate with you. Once we realized that the problem was much bigger than me, I was a catalyst. And the cancer community is a great community to use the Manta, but really it's a catalyst to fix a bigger problem, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, you told me, I mean, I didn't know about how the lack of estrogen in the hair makes it more brittle. And when we went back to the original hairbrush that was invented in 1870, people only lived to 40 years old. You know, then it wasn't, mortality was high then. It wasn't, but now the average age in the Western world is what, 80 years old? So women especially are going through menopause in their mid 40s, 50s, and, you know, and they could have 30 years of a lack of estrogen, which is going to affect their hair. And no one has shown them how to brush their hair effectively without breaking it or look after their scalp. And, you know, we put more and more product on, which is fine, but you need to make sure how you look after the material itself of hair. So I think it's an education piece that we're doing. And it's a longer journey. It's not just an overnight success. It's really to try and change people's way of looking after them. So they look great and feel great in their 60s, 70s, 80s, you know?
And so I think even a few years after my 5 years evidence of disease and you started selling the Manta, we had a telephone call, didn't we, from Dragon's Den. And I just want to fast forward here because it's been crazy in a way that we did this together. And for me going on to Dragon's Den with you, with the Manta, I know you owe me forever.
Shetsy, you are a co-founder of the company, so you can't sort of not take any responsibility.
No, that's true. But I remember being in the lift, in the sort of famous Dragon's Den sort of lift, which is actually not even a lift for anyone at home. Wanting to know, it doesn't go up and down. You just go in and through, out. I'm not sure. Are we allowed
can't
to say
that?
Yet?
You can't say that. It would ruin everything for everyone.
And I said to you, gosh, I'm really nervous. And you just looked at me and said, you've gone through so many other things that were much, much harder than this. And it really reassured me because I thought, I mean, we have been through so many difficult things from the time where I ended up in intensive care for 2 weeks when I thought I'd be home the same day, to all of those really traumatic, you know, cancer diagnosis, BRCA1, double mastectomy, ovaries out, and then being there on Dragon's Den, I kind of thought, yeah, we own this. This is our journey and we're here today. And it was such a celebration for me, although it wasn't positive as such, because they really grilled us, didn't they? But yeah, it was such a life-affirming moment, because you said yes to it so readily and I learned so much from you, because I said no initially. Remember, I said, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. What happens if? What happens if we can't do that? And you said, no, we're going to do this. And you are such a yes person. And so I think the whole experience was just really life-affirming for me. It was brilliant.
Oh, that's nice to hear. You never said that before.
Did I not? No. No. Tell everyone at home who hasn't watched Dragon's Den, what happened in just a minute. What happened? How did we leave the show?
Well, they grilled us. We were there actually for over 2.5 hours or something, 2 hours 20 minutes, and standing on one spot for that amount of time with them asking question after question. You only see 10 minutes that's edited, and in the end, we had some offers. But we're on a bigger journey than, it's not for us just about the money. Like, for example, you know, we donate to a charity, we're ambassadors of a charity, a children's charity that delivers wigs for children with cancer. And we donate a manta to every child in the country that has cancer with the Little Princess Trust. So we've so far given about 8,000 mantas to them. So we're on a, our journey is a bigger journey than just getting money. So we felt that they weren't right, because they were all about what they could earn as opposed to what they can give. And without sort of, it was lovely to see them, but they weren't the right tribe for us, were they, Danny?
Let's put it that way. You respectfully declined and then we left.
Respectfully declined.
Without any cash in our pockets.
Without any cash, not even a bus fare back home.
But it's definitely been one of my sort of highlights for where the manta has taken you. You've got this great team now. We are all bringing all of the healthy, you know, we cook together with everyone, don't we? We have, you came on my last ice bath day.
Oh, yeah, that's good fun.
And the breath workshop day. And so we sort of live it and breathe it. And I think Dragon's Den was a really good sort of life affirming moment for me. One thing that couldn't have happened without your support is really to create the Menopause and Cancer podcast, because I don't even know if people know this at home, but when I first was pushed into menopause because of my surgery, I did all of my research and I didn't find the answers. And so I thought, gosh, I need to bring these answers that are out there, but no one has access to a wider audience. And that is you at home listening to this conversation now. But we launched, you know, we're nearly 100 episodes, and for 100 episodes, we only had 4 sponsors on the show, and they've been amazing brands that helped me educate and get the episodes out to you and pay for the production and the editing and all the trimmings that come with it. But everything else, we've always paid for out of our own
pockets. You've paid for it.
Well, I couldn't have done it without your support. I couldn't have done it without your, you know, time support. I'm often here on weekends. I'm often here in the evenings. I do all of this in my own time. And I really want to thank you for this, because I don't think if you wouldn't pay our mortgage, then I don't think I could be doing this here. So it's real teamwork, isn't it?
Oh, it's always teamwork. And you know what? You said about me being obsessed with a manta, which I am. I'd say I'm obsessed by it. It's my mission in life. But you've been obsessed by supporting people and having a voice for people. The people are going through menopause and have gone through cancer. There's so many individual challenges they will face. And you've got all the best people you can possibly get together to be a voice and give them some guidance. And I know personally that people I've known have got cancer, who've had cancer and menopause, they listen to your podcast and there's a nugget of something. And it's also a support to them that there's a group of like-minded people that can hear what they or feel and speak about what they're going through. So you're only at the start of this, but it's, you know, you've done brilliantly. You've committed loads, but I think it's fantastic what you're doing. honestly. Mm.
And I think when you look back, I think both of our lives have really, really changed. I mean, I used to be a fashion jewelry designer before we had the children, right? And I was designing things for big sort of big corporates like Marks and Spencer's and Accessorize and all of that. And then I became so obsessed with changing my lifestyle. And I wanted to share that through my yoga and supper clubs. And I did the nutrition diploma and all of those things. And then, you know, the podcast, it was never enough. And that now they're not for profit. And it's never enough because we haven't supported enough people out there. But sometimes it's good to anchor in. And I think today is a bit like Dragon's Den. You know, for me, coming up to 100 episodes is not a celebration of the commitment and that we've gone out every week, but it's really a celebration of everyone that is on that journey with us. And so anyone that has listened to more than one or two podcast episodes, I truly feel you're on that journey with us, because I think our conversations here enable you to have more conversations with the people around you, or hopefully they do, with your medical professionals, with your partners, with your family and friends. And that, again, is going to have this massive ripple effect that we all have a better understanding and maybe a more compassionate understanding for our journeys. And in a way, you're just part of that. And Demanta is part of that. And I'm excited to see where the next 100 episodes take us, actually.
Wow, yeah. I mean, how many people you get a lot of people listening, don't you, to your podcast?
Yeah, and I haven't brought the statistics up, but, you know, we've had loads of months where over 20,000 people tuned in, and I can see where you're all from. And we have, you know, we have people from Australia, from America, from Canada, from New Zealand, people from, you know, different countries in Europe tuning in as well. And I want to say to each one of you listening to this now, wherever you are, I really try and truly speak to you, although I don't see you, but I see enough of you at our workshops and at our events, and I really do try and imagine who you are, because we have this shared experience, and it's important for me that we all feel heard. So thank you, Tim, for this celebration. We've got a gift, don't we, for everyone. If anyone knows of a friend who is going through cancer treatment, their hair is growing back, if you feel your hair hasn't been in tip-top shape, we've put together a discount code. I don't think we have it yet, do we? Do we?
No, what it's going to be... M for menopause, C for cancer, 20. So that's MC20 will be your special code to give you 20% off any Manta hairbrush that you would like. And then we can show you how to use it effectively on your hair to cause less breakage.
Yeah, and scalp, because one thing I love doing every single morning after I wash my hair is I give my scalp a little massage.
There's
and it feels
here,
lovely. Yeah.
So there it is. Look, it moves. And then you can get it onto your scalp.
For anyone just listening to this, it's a hairbrush that you slide into between your fingers. And then it moves with your hand and it moves onto your scalp. For me, it's my mini moment of mindfulness in the morning. I use it my way. I bring a bit of volume into my hair. But I just want to say thank you today to you, Tim. And thank you for everyone listening, for being on this journey with me, with Tim. And I can't wait for what the next 100 episodes will bring.
Oh, and well done, you. It's lovely. 100 episodes. Crazy.
Thank you.
Love you.
Love you. Thank you for joining Tim and myself for this conversation. I really wanted to bring a personal conversation back onto the podcast, because I really always think everything we're here talking about is so personal and individual to each one of you, and me included, because so many of the episodes I record really help me myself in how I manage my own menopause after my own cancer diagnosis. And so I'm just going through it. I'm in it just as each one of you at home. And there is no right or wrong way. And we're all doing things differently. And there were many years where I really couldn't find the silver lining in any of this, and where I just found it very hard to find anything positive since my own cancer diagnosis. However, one thing that I always managed to focus back on was this amazing community we've created, and the people that I've been allowed to meet in this life because of our shared experience. And I wonder if you can reflect as well, if you've met other people going through a similar situation, or if you've had relationship that changed, maybe for the positive because of what you shared. And this is something I always want to focus on. It's the incredible community that we've got here. And to me, that is such a silver lining. And I thank each one of you for making this community what it is today, whether we meet in person or online, or whether you're one of the quiet people at the back and you're just absorbing these conversations and you do with them whatever is right for you. I want all of us to feel and to really have that sense of belonging, that there are hundreds and thousands and millions of other people out there in a similar way, sharing this big shared experience. And today I just wanted to share with you what Tim and I have gone through and the many, many positives that have come along since my own cancer diagnosis. I hope you enjoyed it. Tim's got a good laugh, hasn't he? As soon as he cackles, everyone hears him down the road, all of our neighbors. And I'm glad I could share that with you today.